You are Locked On Sooners, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma Sooners. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is up, Sooners Nation, and welcome to the Locked On Sooners Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us. I'm John Williams. You can follow me on Twitter at John9Williams, and you can read my work covering the Dallas Cowboys over at InsideTheStar.com. You can also hear me weekly on the Cowboys Brawl Podcast. And joining me today, as he does every day, is former Oklahoma Sooners offensive lineman and host of the Iron Horse Podcast, David Walker. You can follow David on Twitter at D_Walk74. David, how are things in Georgia, sir?
John, things in Georgia are chilly. It's the fall. It's beautiful. I'm in the pines, but I'm also remote, so not on the typical microphone, dialing in here on the iPhone. But yeah, things are great out here in Georgia. Ready to talk some Sooner football. Excited about the things we have to cover today, but it's also a big day for Sooner basketball. The men are tipping off tonight at Lloyd Noble Center against UTSA. And go back and check out our basketball preview episode from yesterday where I talked with Austin Curtright of OU Daily, Matthew Mossman from the men's basketball staff there at Oklahoma, the graduate assistant coach, and then also Isaiah Cousins joined us from Israel talking about the Sooner team, talking about Lon Kruger and what it's like to play for him, what it was like to go to the Final Four back in 16 as he's playing overseas now in Israel. So go back and check that out from yesterday and tune in tonight to watch the men and check out the women coming up as well. But yeah, let's talk more Bedlam, John. I think we got a lot more to cover from the weekend that was in the quote unquote rivalry, if we can still call it that.
Yeah. And so that's the first thing we should start with, really, is at this point in time, with the way that Oklahoma has dominated this series, should we even be calling this a rivalry?
You know, I think from marketing, the PR people in the Oklahoma athletic department are going to say, oh yeah, we need to keep calling this a rivalry because it helps us sell some tickets and drum up some intrigue. And for those of you that are in that department, I apologize for what I'm about to say next. Because when it comes to the game that is played between white lines on grass in a football stadium, it is anything but a rivalry. It is a bloodbath. It is a no contest. And it is unfair to the word rivalry to continue to trot this out as anything other than a one-sided affair. And there's a lot we can talk about on that, John. But what is your take? Do you think it's a rivalry at this point?
I mean, if you had a game like this that was so lopsided, you'd be really hard pressed to find a rivalry. I mean, it'd be like saying if the New York Yankees had beaten, you know, had won the series against the Tampa Bay Rays 12 of the last 14 seasons. I mean, nobody would call that a rivalry, right? Like a rivalry is there's back and forth. You know, yep. Oklahoma and Texas has much more rivalry-like atmosphere, rivalry-like kind of competition, because it's back and forth. It's not one-sided. It's give and take. You know, Texas is going to take some games. Oklahoma's going to take some of theirs. There's question marks about the game going into it. You know, when you go into Bedlam, there's very rarely any question marks. Most people expect Oklahoma to come out victorious. I mean, yes, they were only like, I think, a 7-point favorite by the time the game started on Saturday. But when the line opened up on Monday, they were 10-point favorites. And I think that just goes to show that even in a year where Oklahoma State has the better record, they have a really good defense, they're thought of pretty well nationally, they're ranked higher, Oklahoma still went in and said, no, this is our game. Like this is the one that we chalk up on the schedule every year that's going to be a W. I mean, it's like, I hate to say that Oklahoma State is like Kansas, but I mean, it almost has that same feel to me. I mean, it's a more competitive game. It's got a lot more heat to it, but they beat Oklahoma State pretty much as often as they beat Kansas. I mean, they beat Kansas more frequently, but Oklahoma State's not far off. So yeah. It just doesn't have the rivalry feel to it. And maybe, you know, I'm not an Oklahoma kid. I didn't grow up in Oklahoma, and so I don't have the same kind of history with the game, maybe as you do. And for others that live in Oklahoma, grew up in Oklahoma, spent time, you know, with people that were Oklahoma State fans or Oklahoma fans, it doesn't really have that same feel. You know, like I, you know, being an NFL kind of analyst. I write for the Dallas Cowboys. And that's kind of what the Dallas Cowboys Philadelphia Eagles game is. That's a legit rivalry because every year there's back and forth. There's question as to who's going to win that game. And both teams really get fired up for that game in particular. Even though there's so much turnover that happens in the NFL, everybody's still really anticipating that game or those two games a year. It just doesn't – Oklahoma's dominance in this game just does not speak rivalry to me.
Yeah, and it's not – you know, I think what's interesting is Oklahoma State has played in some ways their best football when they didn't have a ranking by their name. So it's really – it's almost like for Oklahoma fans, I feel this – thought of, it's actually great for Oklahoma State to be ranked when they come in to play Oklahoma, because we're just actually going to get credit for winning the game that we were going to win anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just it makes it nationally appear like there was maybe some jeopardy, because maybe the people that don't pay that close of attention, they just see, oh, it's number 18 and number 14. And, you know, and they talk themselves into thinking Oklahoma State has a shot. College Game Day convinces themselves that, hey, maybe Oklahoma State will do it this year. And so they come and they give Oklahoma this platform because Oklahoma State is pretty good against everybody else. But they can't beat Oklahoma. And in what other rivalry, John? Let's just focus college football for a second, because you're right. You can go across the sports spectrum of baseball, NFL, college basketball, Duke and North Carolina. I mean, if Coach K lost 14 out of 16 games to North Carolina, even Coach K would be taking some heat, and he's the greatest basketball coach of all time. But you take a Michigan-Ohio State rivalry in football. You take an OU-Texas rivalry. Imagine if Mack Brown or Bob Stoops had gone 2-14 against that other opponent in the Cotton Bowl. Imagine if they had gone 2-4 against the other opponent. They lose 4 out of 6. They're on the hot seat. Like Tom Herman's on the hot seat right now, in large part because he can't beat Oklahoma, and he's only had to play them for a few years. Mike Gundy has a 16-year rampway on ramp, 16 years. He's got there twice. I mean, nobody else in any actual rivalry, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Auburn, talk about the Iron Bowl. You think any coach is getting 16 shots to only win 2? It's just not going to happen anywhere in America other than Stillwater, Oklahoma. And that to me, John, is like, shut the book, swing the gavel, make the verdict. This is not a rivalry based on that particular fact alone, that in no other rivalry that's worth a salt of the word rivalry, worth anything, as it relates to rivalry, could a coach exist in that world, in that space, with the pathetic record that Mike Gundy has? And that's not a personal attack on Mike Gundy, but that record is atrocious. And it's been allowed, and it's going to probably be allowed for a 17th game, because he's going to be back next year.
So while you were talking, I went ahead and looked up the win losses between Oklahoma and Kansas, and because I was really curious. And obviously Oklahoma State and Oklahoma. So Kansas against Oklahoma has a 270 win percentage against the Sooners. They've won 27 times in the rivalry. Oklahoma State's and we've well documented Oklahoma State's winning percentage in the rivalry. It's 187. And I just think that that's evident of the murders that Oklahoma has committed against the Oklahoma State Cowboys in this Bedlam rivalry. I mean, Kansas has more total wins in the history of the game. Now, a lot of those wins came pre-World War II. So modern era, obviously, you know, might change, but I'd have to go back and dig a little bit deeper into that. But Kansas has more wins, 27-18, than Oklahoma State does in this game. So just... Yeah.
So Oklahoma State has 2/3 of the amount of wins that Kansas has against Oklahoma. So we can do it that way.
Yeah. According to Winsopedia.com, that's the place I found this. But
shout out to Winsopedia.
Yeah. Shout out to Winsopedia. I don't know how this has not come up before, and I'm like short of breath over here thinking about the fact that Kansas has 9 more wins than Oklahoma State does in the game. So anyway, but yeah, we'll talk more about Bedlam. We'll continue to dig into what's going on in the game, and but we also want to talk a little bit about what we're thankful for. It's Thanksgiving week, and so we'll do that coming up next here on the Locked On Sooners podcast. But first, let me ask you a question. Do you ever feel like you're always on? What do you do when you need a moment to chill? Well, College Football Saturdays offer the perfect opportunity to watch football and chill with the only beer that's made to chill, Coors Light. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. Even though there are fewer teams playing on Saturdays, there are still plenty of games and other sports going on to give you the opportunity to relax and have a beer. So whether you're having a beer with friends, cooking some meat on the grill, winding down from working in the yard, or watching a full slate of college football games on Saturday, make sure you reach for the official beer of watching any sport or any team just to have a beer. So when you want to reset from a long work day, reach for the beer that's made to chill. You can now get Coors Light in its new look delivered straight to your door by going to get.coorslight.com. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And now I want to tell you about Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. It's easy to eat and is 100% covered in chocolate. It's the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. They've got 18 great flavors, including new options like caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry Garcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. They have nut and non-nut flavors, and best of all, they're good for you. Most bars have about 18 grams of protein and only 4 or 5 grams of sugar. Do you need a protein bar with a Christmas flair for the holidays? Then try the white chocolate cookies and cream or the white chocolate salted caramel. And starting at 5 p.m. on Thanksgiving and rolling through Cyber Monday, Built Bar is offering 25% off every purchase and will throw in 2 free candy cane brownie Built Bars with your purchase. If you use promo code LOCKEDON, you can save an additional 20% off. That's an amazing savings of up to 45% off your next order of Built Bar this weekend at BuiltBar.com. So for the best tasting protein bar on the market and to get an incredible savings starting on Black Friday and rolling through Cyber Monday, make sure you go to BuiltBar.com. That's BuiltBar.com.
All right there, Sooners fans, and we are back here on the Locked On Sooners podcast. Hey, coming up later this week, we're going to get into talking about Morgantown and what it's going to be like for the Oklahoma Sooners to travel to West Virginia to play in another big game, a game that they're going to need to make sure they get themselves back into the Big 12 title picture. But in this segment, we want to spend a little bit of time talking about Thanksgiving. And I'm very thankful for Winsipedia, who provided us this excellent stat that Kansas has 27 wins to Oklahoma State's 18 wins versus Oklahoma. And one thing I failed to mention in the last segment when we were talking about that is Oklahoma has beat Kansas 16 times in a row from 2000 to 2020. So even though they haven't won a game in 16 tries against the Sooners, they still have more wins than Oklahoma State against the Sooners. But anyway, I'm thankful for the internet and the wonderful stats that it provides on a regular basis. But David, let's talk a little bit about the Sooners that we're thankful for. And this could be this year. It can be historically. Who's a guy that you are thankful for, David?
Oh, man. So if we go historic, dang, that opens it up big time. I think as a fan, I would say historically, Josh Heupel, I'm thankful for him. Thankful for him that when I was in high school, he decided to transfer and come in from, you know, originally from South Dakota to the heartland to lead a resurgence of the program that hasn't stopped since. I'm thankful that he, put on the crimson and cream and led us to national title in 2000. On a personal level, I'm thankful to Bubba Burcham, who is Josh Heupel's center. And we had him on a couple weeks ago on the podcast, looking back on that 20-year anniversary. And he was the graduate assistant when I came into play in Norman. And he gave me some, really good piece of advice when I came to my visit and gave me the confidence and kind of assured me that I would be able to get on the field and play and prove myself there in Norman. And I did so based upon that encouragement. And I followed him onto that campus and, played for him and Coach Kevin Wilson. And in his provision came true. The things he said to me came true. And so I'm very thankful to him for believing in me. And I was able to kind of talk with him a little bit about that story on the podcast. We had him during the bye week. But on the current Sooner level, I'm thankful for Drake Stoops. And why Drake Stoops? Well, Drake Stoops, obviously the son of Bob, who was the coach there when I was on campus playing. And I think for any former Sooners, you look at Drake Stoops and you're like, hey, you know what? Like he's one of us. He's one of the old guard. And he's got he really has that OU DNA, so to speak. But take that part away. I'm thankful for Drake Stoops because of the way he plays. Because he's a walk-on. He plays with grit, toughness, heart. And if the Sooners program could do the little things, just the little things on the football field, the attention to detail, and do the dirty work and the little things the way Drake Stoops does, then this team would win a national title and they'd win one very soon. So I'm thankful to Drake Stoops just for doing the little things well, whether that's running in motion, selling out to I bet he ran 300 yards of motion on Saturday night in Bethlehem. So
he did,
and he's blocking downfield. He'll get a catch here and there, but he plays with heart. He does his job under the radar most of the time. But I'm thankful for a guy like that, because winning teams are chock full of guys like that up and down the roster, some that never even touch the field to do that work in practice. So I'm thankful for guys like him that get a chance to show that working hard, having grit, having heart will matter to him as a player, but also to his teammates. So that's kind of the past, present, and future, so to speak, that I'm thankful for when it comes to Oklahoma football.
Yeah, he's one of those glue guys, you know, the guy that may not be the star, but he's a guy that every team needs to be successful. And yeah, I'm glad you brought him up, because absolutely, he may not be the best player on the team, but he's certainly a significant part of the team. And he's a player that they need in order to be successful on offense. And I'll start there. I'll start with the present. And I'm going to say I'm thankful for Creed Humphrey. I think it was huge that he came back for this season. He could have gone into the NFL draft, and there's a good chance he would have been the first interior offensive lineman taken in last year's draft and potentially in the first round. Yet he foregone, you know, he decided to come back. And I think that was huge for an offensive line that has had some difficulties this season. And it's young. It's got some guys that are still kind of proving themselves and still growing into the position. So and especially for a guy like Spencer Rattler to have a center with his experience and his wisdom and his knowledge of the college game to snap him the ball, I think it really kind of helped Spencer Rattler's transition into, you know, as a freshman quarterback into Oklahoma, because you know you got a new guy back there that hasn't played any snaps, hasn't played against Big 12 competition, and you also have a quarterback that's going to have that, and it could create some difficulties for you. But to have a guy with Creed Humphrey's ability and his knowledge and his wisdom to be able to kind of help ease that transition for Spencer Rattler, absolutely huge for this offense and for the offensive line as a whole. Looking historically, I'm going to go back to Roy Williams jumping over the pile and sacking Chris Sims and forcing the fumble that Teddy Lehman picked up and ran into the end zone back in the Red River Shootout way back when. That was really my first kind of like experience and really my earliest memory of the OU Texas game. Even before I was really a fan of the Sooners, that was the game that really like kind of sits in my memory bank as like, That's Oklahoma football. Just really strong, aggressive defensive performance, and Roy Williams just flying over the pile and hitting Chris Sims, and I'll never forget it. It'll be something that sits there in my memory. Anytime I see Chris Sims talking football on television, I just think you're the guy that got Superman hit by Roy Williams. So I don't really have anything else to hear from you. But yeah, that's it for me, David. Personally, on a personal level, give us a few things. Tell the listeners a few things that you're thankful for.
Man, John, you know, that's such a big question, and there's so many things. I mean, right? I think we've all got something to be thankful for, you know, no matter what our circumstances are. But you know, for me this year, I mean, first of all, just you know, God's blessed me with a great family and a great support system. But we were able to bring in a new life this year, and we had our third son, Callahan. Back in October, just a month ago today. So, you know, celebrating that still, and just the troubling year, but to be able to, you know, bring a new life in and the gratitude I have about that, just carrying him through that year with my wife. You know, we thought we had a miscarriage in the beginning, and we went about a week or two, we were just kind of thinking we had this baby, we lost him, and all of a sudden we didn't lose him. And so it was kind of one of those, just felt like a miracle baby, and to kind of carry him, you know, I'm saying carry him. I didn't carry him, clearly. My wife carried him, and she carried me at times, just along this journey. But I think that just the fact of, you know, having a baby in a pandemic year and him being okay and everything was great. It was all the anxieties you can imagine going through through that, all we've gone through this year with bringing a new life into the world. And for those, anybody else that's done that can relate. But that to me, of all things this year, just bringing our third son into the world. And then also just standing right here where I'm standing talking to you and in the deep woods of Georgia, out here doing some hunting. I had my 7-year-old Beckham in the deer stand this morning. We're just sitting out in the woods, and out here, John, like the world is right. you know, and just these moments of that kind of, you can kind of get away where, whatever that looks like for you in your life, that you can get away, retreat into something. If you have an opportunity to do anything, to get outside, find the things in life that can just bring you joy, and don't dwell into the social media world that can bring you down sometimes, but just find those things that bring you joy. And when you can find those things, be thankful for them. And that's kind of where I am right now.
Yeah, I would have to say I'm in the same spot, you know, just very thankful for family, in particular, you know, my wife, and, you know, in this kind of COVID transition that we've had to make, we did a move, I started a new job, and, she's been a real rock for us and our family throughout. You know, my new job, it has me working all kinds of hours, from, you know, sometimes days, sometimes nights. And, there's no telling when I'm going to be working. Usually it's pretty scheduled, but you know, there are times where I have to work a night shift out of nowhere. And, you know, that kind of throws things for the loop, but she's just been so strong, you know, caring for our 4-year-old. And then we're also fostering a baby. And, you know, that's been such a huge, joy for us, just to have our kids and see them thriving. Even, you know, even when, you know, kind of COVID has schools shut down and, you know, relationships kind of cut off, you know, they may not get to see their friends, but both of them were really the baby just kind of sees us, but the 4-year-old, you know, the 4-year-old still she's just doing great. Ellie is just amazing. And, you know, today we just spent the afternoon playing board games. Like we spent some time playing Monopoly, and she actually beat me. She got Boardwalk and Park Place pretty quick, and then put some houses on it, and I was toast. But yeah, she beat me with a little bit of guidance from me on what to do. But still, I was like, okay, I'm losing to a 4-year-old in Monopoly. This is great. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, you know, just to do, you know, like you said, to kind of sit there and do the little things in life and get an opportunity to just decompress and unwind. And you know, and then I'm thankful, you know, for, as a healthcare worker, I'm just thankful for all the nurses and doctors and people that I've worked alongside over the last 9 months during COVID-19 at a couple different facilities. You know, I've seen just impressive selflessness and impressive caregiving provided by nursing and nursing staff across a couple different hospitals. And, you know, I'm thankful that I've had the opportunity to lead in those situations and be a facilitator to help them get the things that they need in order to do their jobs well. A lot to be thankful for. And even though COVID-19 has really kind of put a damper on 2020, I had really, and David, I'm sure David would say the same thing, but we would really encourage you to try to look for the things that you can be thankful for, the things where you feel like have gone well this year, because, you know, it may be hard to find at times, and you may have to unearth some things, but there's probably something there that has been positive for you in this year. For us, we've been able to spend more time together as a family, and we've been able to do some things that we might not have done otherwise, had we, you know, just kind of been on the go in our normal kind of day-to-day life. Let's get back to football in the third segment. Let's go around the Big 12. Let's talk about what happened in the weekend that was, what's coming up in this weekend, and what the Sooners have to continue to do in order to get into the Big 12 title game in Arlington. Hey there, Sooners Nation, and welcome back to the Locked On Sooners podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Hey, make sure you go and check out another great Locked On podcast, whether it's for the Dallas Cowboys, the Dallas Mavericks, Dallas Stars, or if you're a St. Louis Cardinals fan, we have got a podcast for you covering just about every team in every major sport. So make sure you go check that out. If you like what you're hearing here on the Locked On Sooners podcast, make sure you go give us a rating, whether it's on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, make sure you are subscribed to the show. In this segment, we're going to go around the Big 12. There was only one other Big 12 game that happened this past Saturday, and it was an absolute shellacking from Iowa State to Kansas State. David, any surprises there?
I was a little bit surprised that it was 45-0. I mean, we both picked Iowa State to win that football game, so I don't think the outcome was surprising, but I mean, I think we're kind of all left asking ourselves, like, hey, is Iowa State really this complete of a team? And for Sooner fans, I think it's easier to believe than some others because we've seen some of the things they're capable of. But, man, that was quite a performance there in Ames.
Yeah, I was definitely shocked when I turned the game on, I don't know, sometime around 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and I saw the score. I was like, whoa. It was like 35-0 at halftime. And I was absolutely shocked by it. I knew coming into the season, I thought Iowa State was going to be really, really good. Obviously they beat Oklahoma and they're still really good. But I was definitely surprised by the defensive performance that they put on Saturday. But let's talk about the Big 12 schedule that's coming up this week. The big game, you know, aside from Oklahoma and West Virginia, which has now been flexed into the 6:30 p.m. time slot as Oklahoma travels to Morgantown, and it'll be on ABC, so make sure you check that out. But several big games. The most important one of the day is going to be Iowa State traveling to Austin to take on Texas. How does this need to play out for Oklahoma to continue to advance their chances at getting into the Big 12 title game?
Well, for Oklahoma, it really, the outcome matters very little. The outcomes for Oklahoma at this point are really them winning their next two football games. I think the biggest thing is, do you want to play Texas or do you want to play Iowa State in a Big 12 title game? And, you know, Iowa State coming down to Austin 2 years ago was in this exact same situation where they went into Austin in 2018. Had they won that football game, they would have had a chance, had the inside track to go to play Oklahoma. They didn't get it done. So you got the first ever OU-Texas rematch. I think for Sooner fans, you know, we could go back and forth on who they should want to win. I think it comes down to one of two things. Do you want Texas to have an opportunity to get a second shot, or do you want to enjoy that Cotton Bowl win for the full calendar year and not have to worry about, you know, them coming in there and taking a Big 12 title or sneaking one out? I think Iowa State is the more challenging matchup for Oklahoma for a number of reasons, and we can get into that if you'd like. But, you know, I think that's it's going to be personal preference for Sooner fans and their rooting interests. But, you know, it's that one could go either way.
At this point in time, which team would you rather face?
I think if we're just talking about no recruiting ramifications, no rivalry ramifications, and whether or not we can extend Tom Herman, I would say I would like for Texas to win, because I think it would be ultimately, if I knew that Oklahoma would beat Texas 1,000%, I would say, let's let Texas win. That they would almost, they put them in a really tough spot on keeping Tom Herman. And because I don't want to see Urban Meyer in Austin. I'll say it. I don't want to see him there. So, hey, that's why we have hashtag extend Tom Herman. That's why we try to throw it out there on Twitter every so often. Let's get it trending. But I think Iowa State is the harder matchup. So on the field, just sight unseen, if I was just looking at blind resumes, Iowa State's a more difficult matchup because there are three tight ends and the positions they can put our secondary in. And then also they have the best running back in the Big 12 outside of possibly Ramondre in Breece Hall. John, I know you love Breece Hall. You talked about Breece Hall many a time on here. But to me, Iowa State is the more challenging matchup. But, you know, so I guess if I had to say, for all the things, you know, in play, I would say I would rather play Iowa State just because I don't want Texas to even have an opportunity to win a Big 12 championship, not even a chance. So I'll go Iowa State.
Let's kick Texas while they're down. That's always a good thing. And then let's look at the top 25 poll real quick. Oklahoma jumps up to number 14. Now they are the highest ranked team in the Big 12. Does that surprise you that they actually were able to stay ahead of or get ahead of Iowa State?
It doesn't surprise me. You know, I feel for fan bases that have a team ranked a spot or two ahead of them that they've beaten. They have the same record. I know how annoying that is. That's happened to Oklahoma a time or two over the years. But in this situation, I think if you actually factor in, which I'm sure voters are, that yes, Iowa State won by 7 in Ames, but Oklahoma was controlling that football game. And now all of a sudden they have guys out there like the Ramondres and the Ronnie Perkins and the Hazelwoods and the guys who just weren't a part of that game. And I think they're looking at this Oklahoma team today and saying, yeah, that's a different team. This team's better. And that's where that's coming from.
And just some other notes on the top 25 in the Big Ten or in the top 10, got some interesting names like Cincinnati coming in at number 7, BYU at number 8. Do you think those teams are going to have any chance at getting themselves into the college football playoff?
No. Is that too soon? That's headed too fast?
No.
I don't, John, because I just think that one, I don't know what the Pac-12 is going to do, how they're going to finish, how many games they're going to have played, but I can see them having 4 games and having an undefeated team that's 4-0 or 5-0 and getting in over BYU or Cincinnati, especially if it was like USC or Oregon. And I can see, you know, 2 Big Ten teams, 2 SEC teams. I mean, it would go crazy in the Southeastern Conference if BYU or Cincinnati got in over a one loss or two loss SEC team. I'm not saying that I wouldn't rather see a Cincinnati or BYU. I just can't comprehend a world where even in COVID, even in 2020, that one of those two teams makes the Final Four.
And that's why we need to just go ahead and expand this thing to eight. Because we've got to get one of these teams into a college football playoff, give them an opportunity to play for national championship. Hey, and even this year, get rid of all the bowl games and let's just go to 16. Let's get crazy. I mean, teams have played, they've played less games this year as it is. So why not? What's it going to matter if they have to play an extra playoff game or not? Let's just go to 16. Well, let's just have some
fun. If every other major league, the NHL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, they've all did weird stuff for the playoffs this year. They all made some accommodations and said, hey, we're going to do something a little bit different. Like college football, I don't know how the contract works with the CFP and ESPN and the ratings and, you know, but here's the thing. If they have an opportunity in this year to experiment with at least an 18 playoff, I think that would be magical. And like you said, do away with bowl games, because at the end of the day, like, think about these bowl games. Who's traveling to these games? And some of these states that aren't allowing fans, I mean, you're going to have, what, two teams go to a bowl game and play at a neutral site in front of nobody? How fun is that? Right. No bowl activities. I mean, one of the things for a player is a bowl activity or the bowl game experience is you go do some fun stuff when you're there and you kind of go see some things around the town. They ain't going to do that stuff. So, hey, let's just scrap those bowl games. Let's play on campus. And, you know, if there are games like the Cotton Bowl that you're going to have at least 25,000 fans and it has some kind of atmosphere, well, that's a different story than saying, I mean, think about this. I just saw the Final Four college football playoff, the Rose Bowl's in that. So we're going to have a playoff game in the Rose Bowl in front of nobody. That's just going to be awkward. So now that's a playoff game, so people will still watch it. But if it's the Holiday Bowl or the Poinsettia Bowl or the Popcorn.com Bowl, nobody's watching those games with nobody in attendance and no atmosphere. So, yeah, scrap the bowl games. I'm here for an extended playoff conversation, which we can certainly have at some point coming up here on Locked On Sooners. I'm down for that.
Yeah, there'll definitely be time for us to have an expansion conversation. I think this year it would be an excellent opportunity just to, let's have some fun this year. Let's expand it to 16. Let's see what happens with Alabama plays a Coastal Carolina, who's currently ranked 16th in the country. I don't know. I'm for more fun, and more teams that have an opportunity to win a national championship to me is more fun. But that's going to do it for today's episode of the Locked On Sooners podcast. Make sure you check back with us on Friday. We're going to be off on Thursday for Thanksgiving. Enjoy that day with your friends and your family. Stay safe out there. We'll be back on Friday with our preview of the Oklahoma Sooners game against the West Virginia Mountaineers. That's going to take place in Morgantown at 6:30 on ABC. So make sure you check us out on Friday. For David Walker, I'm John Williams. Boomer.
Sooner.